get ready for Malice, a twisted new drama starring Jack Whitehall, David Duchovny, and Carice Van Houten. Jack Whitehall plays Adam, a charming man who infiltrates the wealthy Tanner family with a hidden motive to destroy them. This edge-of-your-seat revenge thriller unravels a deliciously dark mystery in a world full of wealth, secrets, and betrayal. Malice will constantly keep you on your toes. Why is Adam after the Tanner family? What lengths will he go to? One thing's for sure, the past never stays buried, so keep your enemies close. Watch all episodes of Malice on November 14th, only on Prime Video.
I'm Ashley.
And I'm Brooke.
And you're here with us on A Teachers Who Talk Crime
Podcast.
What up? What up, y'all?
Hey, guys.
Y'all have really been coming through with the reviews, and I really appreciate it because I love going in there and just seeing that more people are just five-starring us up.
Yeah, and they've been following our Instagram, so I feel like you get like a little high from the reviews, and I get a little high every time I see so-and-so has followed Teachers Talk Crime.
100%, because we all know that Brooke is in charge of that social media. I'm in charge of the stories on Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday, and I am aware that I forgot to post our Trivia Tuesday, and today's Thursday, isn't it? Darn, so I can't do it today. I'm gonna just do better next week. It's fine.
Remember, you're having a week, and that's fine.
Yeah, and it's fine. It's totally everything fine. Is fine.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But it is. Keep sending us those reviews because we love reading them. And to all of our new influx of Instagram followers, hey.
How y'all doing?
Y'all teaching or whatever? Y'all doing
Wasn't that a TikTok sound? Uh-huh. Hey, how y'all doing? Yep. That was like the OG TikTok sound. Yeah.
But some of them are coming back around, like the balsamic vinegar, the one with Elmo. That one's coming back around.
I got a lot of hate for that one when I did that one.
People going to hate. Haters going to hate. And at the end of the day, we let the haters be our motivators. So period.
Well, here's where social media is like a irking like a brickin.
Did you just say irking like a brickin?
Yes. So here's where I'm annoyed. And I've been doing some Googling. And okay. So when I started posting my reels on Instagram, they were gaining a lot of traction. They were doing great. And granted, they were from TikTok. And I would remove the watermark and I would edit them in a third-party app. So they had no ties to TikTok at that point because they had been re-downloaded twice from different apps.
Okay.
Now, I get that AI is very smart. I have seen AI work in firsthand, and it is ridiculous. And I'm sure that it can figure out that that is a previously posted video. However, now my videos are getting no traction. And by no traction, I mean like 5 views. And it doesn't make any sense. And so I was Googling, and Instagram wants you to create original content on their platform. I am sorry. I do not have enough time to create original content on TikTok, then go to Instagram and create original content on Instagram, and then go to Facebook and create original content on Facebook.
Yeah, that's just really ridiculous. You know, I used to have dreams of being a social media influencer, and just the amount of work, like I've seen videos like, get ready with me for a day of, you know, content making. And I'm like, that's exhausting on top of working, on top of doing this podcast, on top of being a mother, and on top of having time to myself. That's a lot. And it's just something that I cannot factor into my life right now. If someone wants to come and start editing this podcast, you know, let us know. We can't pay you. We cannot pay you. But if you really enjoy our podcast that much and would like to help, you know, these two teachers out, you know, knowing our busy schedule, Brooke out here planning a whole wedding.
Yeah, I am.
You know, she planning a wedding. I'm planning life, you know.
Yeah.
It's a lot. So, you know, I feel like we said this a number of times. But again, I just want to put out there that you will not be getting paid. This is a, what's it called? This is a internship.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So if you got talents with editing podcasts and you want to edit this one
for some practice,
yeah, just let us know. You know, send over your resume.
Yeah. I mean, it is like literally a whole job. And like, so I do try my absolute best. And what's so funny is I'm from like the teeniest, tiniest of towns. And I know that my town talks mad shit about me because they think like, oh, look at her. She thinks she's an influencer. No, 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 honey. No, Barbara. I don't think that I'm an influencer. I just so happen to have a follower account and people tell me that I should start posting things. And so I do. And then I get crap for it. And then I get no views. And then I'm like, why am I doing this? And then I try harder. And it's just an up and down roller coaster. And I had one friend tell me one time, I wish I could get paid for just posting. I was like, don't even, because that it's so not much even more that than easy. That. It's and not like even. I used to think that too. And then I started like trying and I literally went to get dinner because I've had the busiest day of like all days. And I was in the drive through because I ate Guthrie's and that's a chicken place and whatever. My stomach was going to hurt in 5 minutes. Anyways, so I was on Instagram. I was like, I have no content to post today. I was like, what in the world is on my camera roll that I can just repost? Because I was to that point, like, because I knew I had to post to keep the algorithm like up to speed.
Yeah, just the algorithm alone. It keeps changing. It's just like, I would love to get sent things for free and make a cute video. But, you know, I'm just not it right now. If you want to send me things for my kids, like if there are toy companies out there for like six and up, like let me know, because that stuff I can do, because that's them. And kids are the most honest human beings on the planet.
They are.
So if there's some toy companies out there who try and send me some toys for my kids, you know, some educational activities, Melissa and Doug, we love them. We love Melissa and Doug.
I do not know a Melissa and Doug, but what's the cupcake song they've been singing a lot lately? You got reposted for that.
Oh my gosh. Yes. We listened to a podcast called Story Pirates, and there was one episode where, so what they do is they take story submissions from kids and they turn them into like these productions of stories, and sometimes they turn them into songs. So, a couple episodes ago, this little girl sent in a story, like the cupcake story, and they made it into a song, and Sarah Bareilles actually sung the song. So there, when I tell you, after we listened to that episode, they probably asked for that song on loop like 50 times. But the thing that was hard for me is you have to go in the episode and find it, like in the episode. And I was like, when I reposted it with the girl singing and dancing to it, I was like, if you could put this on Apple Music,
it that would make my life easier.
Much appreciated, because the dancing cupcake, that is my name is Katie. Like that song slaps.
Yeah, like, they were singing it the whole time I was there.
Like episode, let me find what episode. If y'all have kids who like stories, y'all need to listen to episode. Oh, see, look, it's already playing. I'm tripping. Y'all need to listen to episode 30. What season is this?
You need to screenshot it and send it to me so I can put it on our story.
Yes, put it on the story. We're going to put it in the show notes, because when I tell you the dancing cupcake song, and then if your kids mess with this song as much as my kids, like take a video of your kids just jamming out and tag us, tag the podcast, tag Sarah Bareilles so she can put it on Apple Music, because it's needed at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so that's the sitch.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Bim, 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 and they kept
rant complete.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to jump in, because I think my case is like pretty long, because there was like a lot of details.
Yeah. It's so hard. I feel like I've been trying to pick shorter cases lately because of all of the things that I have going on in my life. But once the summer's here, I can definitely, maybe I'll do our first two-parter, yeah. You know, maybe we can dive into one of those. But right now during the school year, it is just not possible for me to spend more than one day doing research on a case. I cannot expend myself anymore. So I really hope that the episodes that I have been responsible for have been up to your standards, have been good, because a girl is trying.
Mm-hmm. Well, this one got done. Well, this one, I've been working on this in a while. So I started a another case, and I was working. And I always like to see like how many podcasts have covered this. And typically I do listen to Creeps and Crimes. I love Taylor and Morgan. I really do. And I have been off of them recently because I have been listening to I Survived. And I'm like obsessed with it right now. Mm. Still support Taylor and Morgan. But when I searched this case on Apple Podcasts, they have like recently, they recently covered the case that I was wanting to cover. I did not know that. And by recently, I mean like last week. And I was like, that's a little too close. So I'm going to like kind of space it out a little bit. So then this case, I was working on it, and listen to the irony of this situation. So we, this week alone, teachers had to go Monday. Students did not, right? Yeah, that was good. President's Day.
Oh, Tuesday, I didn't know that you didn't have, oh, I thought you had kids Monday. At least the kids weren't there, but still, why? It's a holiday. Like, the fact that y'all don't get off, was that a federal holiday? Like a thing. Like, y'all don't get off for federal holidays?
We do. I don't know why the presidents don't seem to matter.
Hello, who's running this country into the ground? I mean, not, I'm not talking about right now. I'm just talking about past. You know, I don't really follow politics. It's not really my cup of tea. But, you know, the way we are today has been influenced by past presidents. And I feel like we should at least get off for that.
Yeah, so we did, but we went anyway. So that's crazy. Went, and we went to work Monday. We went to work Tuesday, and yes, it is very important. But when I tell you the email that we got, this is why I'm stating all this, right? Okay, so no kids Monday. Yeah. Teachers went to work. Tuesday, we get to school. Our classes are cut to 30 minutes each, and we have a two-hour-long Black History Month program. And then
program. Like somebody come in, or like you got to do it?
No. So, like, we had speakers. Like, the mayor of the town came.
Oh, that's cute.
We had dancers that did, like, an African dance. We did a PowerPoint. Several influential. Because, like, our school was the first Black high school in Alabama.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, like, we're a historic site.
Wow. Look at you.
Super cool. Super cool. So, people from when it was not segregated came. That are still alive, and they spoke to the kids and just talked about, like, you know, look at where we were. It was a very important. Wow. So we did that in the morning. That was 2 hours. Then all of our classes were 30 minutes. This is still on Tuesday. Then they say, okay, math teachers, we need you for the second half of the day to sit in meetings all day long. Okay, yes. Cool. Then Wednesday comes around, and I am told that I have not been to this training on numbers and I should go. So Wednesday, I did not go to work. I went to a training all day long. Mm. And then Thursday, which is today, we had another assembly in the morning. And I missed 3 classes of that because the assembly took so long. Then we get an email at lunch and it says, due to state testing coming up and diagnostic testing coming up, please utilize every minute of your content time. Are we joking? Like, you keep taking my content time. I'm not taking my content time.
Wow, that's
I value my content time. I'm trying. Yeah. You keep scheduling this and that and this and this and this.
It's one of the things that really irk as a teacher, just like trying to utilize all that time. Because how long are your blocks?
52 minutes.
Okay, you're 52 minutes. I'm 55 minutes, but I'm expected to do whole group instruction, small group, like the whole shebang shaboom for third graders in 55 minutes. Mm-hmm. Mind you, our range of children right now is like anywhere from like you're reading at like a kindergarten level to like maybe like advanced third grader.
Yeah.
So, like, it's just, like, how am I supposed to perform magic in this allotted time? And then you want to schedule, like, assemblies and celebrations and things for us to go to, which, granted, I love that.
And kids need it. I understand. They do. They need it. We need it. Yes.
But the fact that after that happens, I'm like, all right, one of my classes are going to be behind. So now I have to do some type of review. So one class isn't behind all the other three. And it's just very chaotic. And if we could just find a better way to do this, that would be more efficient. Now, I know a lot of people are solution, you know, based. It's like, well, if you have a problem, come with a solution. I have no solution for this. I literally have no idea how this needs to be fixed. But the stress that falls on a teacher's lap when it's like assembly, it's also like low key, like, oh my gosh, this is assembly. But oh man, there's an assembly. I'm going to admit. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's not
very up and down.
Yeah. So if we can figure out a better time to do that, that would be great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what I was saying is I had majority of this case done, but like during the assembly today for 2 hours, I literally was working on this case in the back of the auditorium so no one could see my screen because that would be creepy because then they're like, why are you Googling murder? This is weird. And yeah, so I worked on this case at home majority of the time. And then I had the time during the assembly because like, if my kids are acting up, they just acting up. Like, I am not about to pull them up in the middle of an auditorium and make a scene. You just gonna have to be acting up. Somebody else gonna have to handle you. That is just not, no longer my problem.
Yeah, get somebody else
I will address it when we get back in our room, in our domain, in our house. And that's that. So anyways, I get it. My case is pretty long, and I know we've rambled past our 10 minutes, so we're gonna go ahead and jump into the star student.
Yup, estudiante estrella. And the estudiante Estrella, whoa, saying words incorrectly, is Lolan 23.
Lolan 23.
And their review says, we see it every day, .. And it says, I really hope we didn't do this one. I know it's not on the thing, but this sounds kind of familiar now that I'm looking at it. But it's not on our tracker, so we're going to do it again. So even if you got it, you're getting it again. So the review states, if you are not a teacher, then you just don't know. The galley gals bring you the super scoopity scoop on the kids gone wild. We get the shivers. We know them kids. That just ain't right. And they bring those kids to your podcast. Yikes on tykes on bikes, y'all. Thank you for the background research and links you provide on the case and the time and energy you take to tell the sordid stories. Who'd have thunk this would be the pastime to get me to bedtime? I feel like we definitely did read this one, but I...
Was she the first person to do yikes on tykes on bikes? She was not.
I don't think so.
Yeah. I really don't think so either.
And if it is, well, you get it again. Because now you want a tracker, so...
Yeah, you now officially own the tracker.
Now we track for our
star students.
Now it's for real. But Lolan 23, I thank you so much for your review. This gold star's for you. Bing. And I also forgot to say that it was a 5-star review. Bing, 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 bing.
Bing, bing, bing.
Yeah, go ahead, Blue's Clues. You got it.
Yep. So thank you, Lolan 23. And we're going to jump right into it. So here we go. Sit down. Shut up. The murder is about to begin.
Ahora.
Okay, so about 3 episodes ago, Ashley did an episode, and we titled it The Scream Murders. It was based off of the Scream franchise, the horror movie franchise, and it was 2 kids, and they were obsessed with the Scream murders.
Indeed, they were.
So when I was doing our socials for this, I came across the fact that there were more than 1 Scream murders. Mm-hmm. And I immediately texted Ashley, and I was like, hey, did you know? And she goes, nah, no, there's not. And I said, yes, there is. And today... we are going to be doing another case based around the Scream franchise.
Dang. Y'all need to stop with that.
Yeah, I don't like that.
Stop watching stuff. Stop doing that.
And it's weird because isn't there a new Scream movie coming out like or came out very recently?
I think it's coming out soon, and I think it's based in New York. I know it's based in New York, but I did see billboards when I was coming back from New York recently. So it's either out or coming out very soon.
This is not sponsored by the Scream franchise, nor are we promoting the Scream franchise.
Just I mean, if y'all trying to give us some money, then absolutely, this episode is sponsored by Scream. No, I'm playing. I'm just kidding.
So the trigger warnings for this case are mentions of suicide, stabbing, murder, talks of school shootings, talks of school shooters, and talks of notorious murderers.
Dang, I feel like your trigger wardens be like crazy.
All over the spectrum. All of them. Yes. The overall summary for this case is, this case took place in Bannock County, Idaho, and on September 22nd, 2006, Cassie Jo Stoddard, a student at Pocatello High School, was stabbed to death by her classmates and friends, Brian Lee Draper and Tori Michael Adamczyk. Both boys were charged and sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole in August of 2007.
Wow. Those were your friends?
Uh-huh.
Why are your friends doing that?
Because they crazy.
Like, clearly.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Cassie was 16 years old at the time of her death. She was one of three children in her family, and she had one younger brother and one older sister. The family lived in Pocatello, Idaho, and Cassie was a junior in high school at Pocatello High School. Pocatello, Idaho is the fifth largest city in Idaho with a population of 55,000 and is a stop along the Oregon Trail.
Oh. Okay.
Remember that game?
Yeah. I was not very good at that game.
Me neither.
Yeah. My people never survived.
Oh, yeah. Same with my Tamagotchi.
Oh, I love Tamagotchis.
Mine always died.
I love them. They were my favorite. They need to bring those back. I would get one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I bet your Nintendo Switch has one.
Stop. I'm going to look as soon as I'm done.
Yep. So Pocatello is predominantly a Mormon town with a simple way of life among its community members. Growing up, Cassie and her brother resided with her grandparents, but it is not noted why, and by all accounts, it is really irrelevant to the case because Cassie still maintained a good relationship with her mother.
Okay.
Cassie, by all accounts, was a normal everyday teen with a steady home life, good family, and good friends. Cassie did not drink or use drugs and had a great reputation at school. Her reports show that she was also a straight-A student who worked hard academically. She and her boyfriend named Matt Beckham, who attended the same high school as Cassie, had been dating for about 5 months at the time of the attack. Her and Matt would spend time together at Cassie's house, but Cassie wanted a little bit more independence and had been saving up for her first car. She was doing normal girl/teen jobs like babysitting and house sitting for local family members. She would mainly babysit and house sit for her Aunt Allison and Uncle Frank, who lived nearby her grandmother's home. So when they asked her to house sit the weekend of September 20th, she happily accepted the opportunity.
Okay.
Who are Brian Draper and Tori Adamczyk? Well, Brian Draper spent most of his childhood in Utah, but his family moved to Idaho as a teenager. Brian met Tori Adamczyk while attending the same high school, Pocatello High School, and the pair immediately bonded over filmmaking, in particular, horror films.
Oh.
They would film themselves daily, like what we would consider vlogs in today's time.
Okay.
And it was like VHSs. So they were carrying around like the whole camcorder thing.
That's a lot.
That's a lot.
That's influencing before it was influencing.
Exactly. And they did not need to be influencing anyone.
And there was no algorithms.
Nope. No AI.
Mm-mm.
It was just I.
Like your eyeball.
So, like I said, Tori and Brian would film themselves daily, and these would basically be what we think of as vlogs. They were very interested in the movie Scream at the time and wanted to actually make their own horror film. They literally would watch anything in the horror category. Brian, among the two, was the more outgoing type between Tori and Brian. It was suspected, and in one source even noted, that Brian actually had a crush on Cassie. Cassie, however, did not reciprocate these feelings, and the two just remained friends. It is also noted that Brian had a stutter in school when he was an adolescent age.
Mm.
Brian categorized himself in high school as a, quote, loser and outcast.
Yikes. Like, let's think a little bit more positively about ourselves, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, don't ever call yourself a loser.
No, and he like believed it.
Yeah. And like I tell my third graders, if you believe it, you can achieve it. So if you said you was a loser, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And even though he was the more outgoing type, he did struggle fitting in with his peers. And this is partially because he was fascinated by
murder.
The Colin- well, yeah, that, oh. But particularly the Columbine shooting.
Oh, no.
And just school shootings in general.
You know, that's a red flag.
It is a very large red flag.
If you are like idolizing and that is your, oh my God, the school shooting was the great. Mm-mm.
And here's why. He admired the Columbine killers and he admired what they did because he, Brian, said they represented, quote, the outcast group.
Oh, Lord of mercy. No, no, mm-hmm. No.
They didn't. They did not.
And now they, look at where they at. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Like, now they're even more outcasted.
Well, look at where the majority of school shooters are.
Like, they're either dead or in jail.
Exactly.
So you're more isolated than you were before.
And you were talked about for a week, and now you're forgotten.
Yep.
Mm. Yeah. So on the Friday that Cassie was murdered, the boys filmed Cassie Jo Stoddard at her locker putting away her books. She was smiling, she was talking to them, and she even waved to them goodbye.
Oh, not a wave.
They even spoke to her on the footage, and like I said, she was very cordial in the footage, showing that she did have a relationship with both Brian and Tori. She was their peer. She was their classmate. She was their friend.
Mm-hmm.
Former teachers and family members described Tori as being the more immature of the two. And by immature, he was very immature for his actual age. Mm-hmm. He was 16 years old, but he was even more immature than an average 16-year-old boy.
Okay.
And they say that Tori was lacking critical thinking skills, meaning he was very easily manipulated and easily influenced. Okay. Now, with this description of him, there are still many others, including prosecutors and judges and other people in the Supreme Court, that believe, yeah, he might have been those things, but he was very aware of what he was doing, when he was doing it, and he was in control of his actions.
Clearly he wasn't, but okay.
Well, they're saying that, like, you can't try to use the insanity plea, or you can't say... I guess what they're arguing is even if he had a slightly lower IQ than Brian, it wasn't low enough to say he didn't know what he was doing.
Okay.
If so that he makes sense.
Yeah, so he was low, but not low enough to be, like, not low enough to strictly say that he was influenced. Like, he was aware of what he did when he did it.
Yes, and I'm gonna read a little bit of like a transcript of like their conversation, and you'll see what I mean. Like, he's very aware. So just for example, in one part they're talking about like just murder in general, mm-hmm. and he says, quote, like he literally says, quote, this is really bad of us to do.
Yeah,
like he knows right from wrong.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, mm-hmm. You knew what she was doing.
So on September 22nd, 2006, Cassie's mother took Cassie to her aunt and uncle's home on Whispering Cliffs Drive to begin to stay at their house as a house sitter. This area was somewhat secluded, and neighbors were around, but they were pretty far and in between. Cassie had been there a million times, and she was not worried about being alone. She also had the company of 3 cats and 2 dogs,
aww,
which she felt pretty safe. This was her cousin's house. This was her aunt and uncle's house. She'd been there a million times. She can do this. Cassie, being the responsible teenager that she was, she did not want to disrespect the home or her aunt and uncle. So she asked her aunt for permission to invite her boyfriend, Matt, over to the house that night. Her aunt and uncle agreed, knowing the type of person Cassie was and the type of young man that Matt was. So on Friday night, Matt came to the home on Whispering Cliffs Drive around 6 p.m., and the two planned to hang out and watch a movie. However, Matt decided to invite 2 more friends that also attended the same high school as them. Can you guess who it was?
Oh, the murderers.
Brian and Tori.
But why would he invite them, knowing that she didn't want to disrespect her, like, her family's house?
So she was really iffy about it. And I think I mentioned this in just a second, but she was like super weird. Like it's not that she didn't like Brian and Tori. It was just like, hey, I only asked permission for you to come over.
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. Like, why would you disrespect her in that way? Like, look, I asked for permission for you to come. And now you're inviting two other people, which I did not inform my family about. And is like going against like the trust that I have built with them.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. And the reason that Brian and Tori were invited over is Matt was friends with Tori and Tori was friends with Brian. So Matt originally invited Tori over and Tori brought Brian.
Oh, no, that's unacceptable.
So now a third person is taking it upon themselves to invite someone else.
Yeah, it's just like a flow of disrespect mm-hmm. going around.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Brian and Tori arrived at the home around 6:30 to 7 o'clock p.m. The group still had a plan to watch a movie, but unknowingly, Brian and Tori had a lot more on their agenda. Mm. Now, Cassie allowed Matt to invite the boys over, but sources say that she wasn't thrilled with the idea and felt very uncomfortable. Mm. So, as Ashley mentioned, yes, she asked permission for Matt to come over, but she didn't ask about Brian and Tori, so she was just super, like, on edge. However, the night carries on and she doesn't really speak up about the matter. Like, she just kind of lets it go. Mm-hmm. So the night carries on and the group do end up watching a movie, and it was Kill Bill Volume 2. But at some point, about 2 hours after Brian and Tori arrived, they say that they're bored and they don't want to watch this movie over here. And they want to watch a movie at a movie theater because that seems more fun.
Well, go do that because you weren't even invited here anyway.
Exactly.
Bye.
Yeah.
So me and my boyfriend can have a quality time without mm-hmm. you people.
Exactly. So they leave and they head to the movie theaters. So I think that the duo, it's like reported that Brian and Tori thought there might be a party at Cassie's aunt and uncle's house because obviously she was alone. And I don't know how they got that because Matt never said that, but they say that like in their police interview, and a lot of sources mentioned that like they were under the impression that there was a party. I don't buy that. I think it was more of a like an alibi as to why they were there the night. So anyways, they think there's a party and they leave. They're like, this is lame. I don't want to watch Kill Bill Volume 2. I'm going to go to a movie theater. And Matt and Cassie believed that the two boys were headed to the movie theater. They left, they got in the car, they drove off. But shortly after the two boys left, approximately 15 minutes after the two boys had apparently left the home, the power went out.
Mm.
And the movie was cut off along with the lights.
Mm-mm.
Cassie, being a little bit worried because, you know, the night hasn't gone as she has planned and... Yeah. It's now, all of a sudden, the lights are going out.
Yeah, that's suspicious.
Yeah. And she didn't, I mean, yeah, she knew this house, like it's her cousin's house, but like she's also a teenager. She's 16 years old. She didn't know where the breaker box is. I mean, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
The lights, I mean, I vaguely knew where our breaker box was the first time I had to flip a breaker. Like, I think I was like, it was subconsciously that I knew where it was, but I would not walk into your house and be like, I know exactly where Ashley's breaker box is, you know, like,
yeah.
So not knowing where the breaker box is and not really wanting to get up and explore the situation, her and Matt decide to wait in the living room and sit there together and just spend some time together until the lights come back on. They just kind of thought the lights would just magically come back on.
Okay.
And they were kind of hoping that it was more like of an oops situation. The lights blink, somebody, you know, is out down the street working on the lights, whatever. This does prove to be somewhat true because moments later, some lights did come back on.
Some?
Yep.
Oh.
But not all of them. So the whole house did not re-light up like a Christmas tree, only a few lights. And at this time, Matt reportedly calls his mother while this was going on. And he was really worried about Cassie. And he could see how the lights flickering and the whole Brian and Tori thing and just it just being a weird night. Like, he could see how this was affecting Cassie. Mm-hmm. And so he asked his mom if he could stay with Cassie at Cassie's aunt and uncle's house to make sure that she was all right and she was comfortable and she was safe.
Oh, that was kind.
It was very kind. His mother was obviously not on board with this idea because, well, you know, Ashley, you're a mom. Would you have let your 16 year... Okay, I didn't even have to finish the sentence.
Hell no.
Yeah.
And I'm not looking forward to when they're that age. I'm really not.
Yeah.
Because, no offense, but... Not no offense. That was the wrong thing to say. But I just know what I was doing at that age. So that's all I got to say about that. And it will not be occurring with my children. Okay.
So, and y'all just heard it from a mother's perspective. So I'm not like shocked that his mom was like, no, you cannot stay over there unsupervised. So his mom's like, nah, that's not gonna happen. So sources say that Matt later added to the fact that, hey, mom, like, you know, the lights are flickering, the lights are going off. It's just kind of a weird vibe. Like, mm-hmm. Cassie's not feeling safe. She's not mm-hmm. feeling great. And then he's like, also, like, the dogs are acting really weird. Mm-mm. And one dog is hanging out in front of the basement stairs, mm-mm. barking and staring in a really odd way.
Nah, the dogs, they know.
They know.
They know. If I ever get a dog and he do some shady stuff, we moving immediately.
Mm-hmm. They see ghosts and everything. I swear, dogs can see spirits.
Maybe I don't want a dog because that would just scare. If I just see you staring, I'm going to be like, tell it to go away.
Well, Bella, our oldest lad, she just stares at walls. We call her a cow because you know how cows just stand there.
Oh, leave her alone, that precious soul.
Well, she's old. So Matt is noticing the dogs, and Matt says that the dogs are starting to make him even feel really uneasy. But he said, although he has a weird feeling, you know, he didn't really go down in the basement and check anything out. Because you know what? Let's not go to the basement. No. Let's just not. Let's just do away with basements altogether.
Because hypothetically, what if somebody is down there? What you going to do?
Exactly.
I know what I'm going to do. Run and scream like a punk. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I did want to say, like, this is a little sidebar because this case has a ton of shoulda, coulda, and woulda. Mm-hmm. And I do want to state that what happened to Cassie cannot be undone. And by no means am I placing blame on anyone besides the two people that deserve the blame.
100%. Yeah.
It is not Matt's fault. It was never Matt's fault. I do not blame Matt for not going in that basement. I do not blame Cassie for not going in that basement. I do not blame those dogs for not going in that basement.
We don't blame anyone for not going in that basement.
Like, but there's a ton of coulda, shoulda, wouldas, you know?
Yeah.
So around 11 p.m., Matt's mom arrives at the home to pick up Matt because she was...
I hate that.
So she arrives there to get Matt, and because she wasn't comfortable with Matt staying the night with Cassie. He did try to ask his mom one more time if she would make an exception because just Cassie was not feeling super comfortable. But her final answer was no. However, she did say that she was okay with Cassie coming to stay the night at their house.
Okay.
But when Matt told Cassie about this, she said no. She said she felt like she would be breaking her promise to her aunt and uncle by leaving the home. And it was her responsibility to the animals, her aunt, and her uncle to stay.
Oh, what a good egg.
I swear, she was a rock star.
Because she is better than me. I would have been like, sorry, cats. Sorry, dogs. Gotta go.
Okay. See you in the morning when the sun comes out.
Yep, I will come feed you in the a.m. I'll even leave you some food before I go right now. But what I'm not going to do is sleep up in this house with this dog staring at the basement.
And the lights going on and off.
That's a little too suspicious for me.
I agree. Again, coulda, shoulda, woulda. I mean, it was very nice of Matt's mother to offer. Yeah. However, Cassie being so responsible and so awesome, like I do see her point as well.
Yeah.
I am very unsure why Cassie never called her own mother or her aunt when the lights thing was happening, because the first person I would call would be like my aunt, be like, hey, yo, something wrong with your lights. Is this like normal?
Yeah.
You know, but for whatever reason, she didn't feel the need to. So after Matt leaves the home, Cassie is hanging out when the lights start going off and on again.
Oh, no.
And this happens until the lights cut out altogether. Now, when Matt left the house, he allegedly calls Tori's cell phone to see where the boys were. He was like, okay, well, I've left Cassie. Like, let me go hang out with my boys. Let me go just, like, chill with them. My mom won't let me stay with my girlfriend. She's kind of, like, blocking my game. My girlfriend didn't want to come stay with me. So, like, let me go hang out with my boys. So, Matt calls Tori's cell phone, and he was trying to get up with the boys, but Tori was whispering when Matt called him. And Matt assumed that Tori was whispering because the boys were actually in the movie that they said they were. What Matt and Cassie did not know was that when Brian and Tori left the home, Brian Draper had said he had gone to the restroom, but instead he had gone and unlocked the basement door so that he and Tori could re-enter the home. After they left, the boys parked down the street and walked back to the home in costumes that consisted of dark clothing, gloves, white painted clown-looking scream mask, and reports go back and forth on what the original intent was, but I do personally believe that this act was what I'm about to prescribe, and I prescribe.
Yeah,
I'm
not you
prescribing nothing.
You were doctor.
This act is exactly what I'm about to describe, and I do personally think that this was 100% premeditated. Mm-hmm. And you will see what I'm seeing in like 2 seconds. The boys re-entered the basement and unsuccessfully attempted to lure the couple to the basement to, quote, scare them.
The both of them.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah. When the noises...
Sorry. So their intentions were to kill the both of them.
Well, apparently the intention was just to scare them.
Yeah, but at that point, you can clearly hear that there shooketh upstairs. So you did you did what was intended. You could leave now.
You can go. You can go home.
Yeah, like you scared them. They scared. He like trying to be like, I'm going to stay. She like, no, I got a duty to do.
Mm-hmm.
You scared them. You did it. You didn't.
Well, okay. So even if they didn't come down and you didn't scare them in that way, when Matt left, you should have left. Like, what? You know, you should have left. Matt's your friend. You leave.
Yeah. Like, you know her, but you don't know her like that.
Correct. So, like I said, they unsuccessfully tried to lure the couple to the basement to, quote, scare them. And when the noises they were making didn't work, that is when they flicked the lights off and on and off altogether. The pair heard when Matt's mother arrived and when he left. That is when they attempted to then lure Cassie into the basement once more by turning the lights off again. When she did not bite the bait, the boys decided to go upstairs armed with daggers and weapons. Yeah. And Tori had a hunting knife. And this is why I say that you were not there to scare them. Because why do you need to bring multiple knives to scare someone? Why 100%. Can't you do the old-fashioned pop out the side and go, boom?
I mean, that's what worked for me.
Exactly. Like, I'm peeing my pants in that.
Like, sometimes you don't even got to do that much. It's like, sometimes my kids just come up to me unexpectedly and I scream. Like, you know?
Yeah. You can leave your daggers at home. Just leave those at home.
Yeah, you equally as scary with your little getup you got on. So
yeah, you wearing a clown mask, that does it for me.
That's terrifying. I would poop myself. Yeah. I would.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right there, just yep.
Yes. So Brian had a dagger type weapon, and Tori had a hunting knife. And like I said, it just isn't. It's not a scary tactic. It is murder on the brain, and you just cannot convince me otherwise. And the knives were purchased earlier at a local pawn shop, which then became more evidence because you can see on their surveillance both Brian and Tori purchasing knives. But you were just there to scare them.
How old were they again?
16.
You allowed to buy, like, knives at 16 at a pawn shop?
I guess so.
That's legal?
I don't even know.
I don't think that's legal.
I don't know. I've never really bought anything from a pawn shop, to be quite honest.
Neither have I. I've seen those shows, like, Pawn Wars or whatever the hell it's
called. Yeah, yeah, I've seen those
too. Something like that, but I've never dabbled. Mm-hmm.
So the boys go up the stairs and they slam the door to make noise. And when they come up from the basement, they began attacking Cassie.
Just like stabbing her.
Uh-huh.
Oh my gosh.
Uh-huh. The day after the weird lights and movies, Matt hung out with Tori. So the very next day, Matt is hanging out with Tori Adamczyk, and he reports that throughout the day, he constantly tries to call Cassie and get up with her, but there is no answer.
And Tori's like, yeah, just standing there watching him. She's probably just sleeping. Like, she cool. She napping, you know.
Yeah.
Everything's fine, bro. Chillax. Let's play this game. Oh, I hate that. I hate that.
Knowing the whole time.
There is just like another level of just like.
Sinister.
Yes. Like you purposely went to go hang out with this man.
To see what he knew.
He would be telling you, like, yeah, this is what happened last night and da da da. Because he probably like low-key got off on it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm the reason why she's not answering because I killed her. You know what I mean? Like, and yeah. I hate that. I hate mm-hmm. that.
2 days later, on September 24th, 2006, after Cassie's aunt and uncle went out of town, they return home and Cassie's cousin, who is 13 years old, enters the home first. Mm. And she said that the first thing she noticed was that the front door was unlocked. And she noted that this was strange, but returning home from a trip, we all know there's a lot going on when you get home. You're ready to go into your house. You're ready to be back in your environment. And so she didn't stop and think too much about it. The cousin goes into the living room where she finds Cassie's body on the floor covered in blood. Cassie had been stabbed to death. The cousin, in shock, screams, and the rest of the family comes rushing inside the home to discover what had happened to Cassie.
Mm.
This event was very traumatizing, and it hit Cassie's cousin very hard as she was only 13 years old when she discovered Cassie. A few years later, the events were still so traumatizing and so tough to deal with that the cousin had attempted to unalive herself due to the events that she had suffered.
Oh, poor baby.
She is seeking help, and she is doing better.
That's good.
And so I did want to point out that this tragedy affected so many people directly.
Mm-hmm.
The family, once Cassie was discovered, did inform the police, and the investigation got underway. The investigation quickly showed that Cassie had been dead for a few days, and the family knew that she had arrived on Friday night, so it was determined that she had been dead for over 24 hours. The family also made a mental note when asked by the police if anything had been taken from the home, and they said no, that everything had appeared to be in place. This meant it was not a burglary gone wrong.
Mm.
The autopsy performed on Cassie's body showed that she had been stabbed 30 times. It was also discovered that 9 to 12 of those stab wounds were fatal. Wow. The first and obvious suspect was Matt. Boyfriend. Cassie's aunt and uncle knew that he had been at the home that night, and he was the most likely suspect at the time because, like we say, the husband did it, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Investigators stayed pretty narrow on Matt because of his lack of emotion, but later he just said he was in shock. So when they asked him about Cassie, he didn't have any emotion. He was very just kind of cold. But again, my least favorite thing that police do, and they do a lot of crappy things, but when it comes to investigation, my least favorite thing that they do is he did not react the way that he should react. Who yeah. are you to tell someone how to react to a tragedy?
Yeah, there's no textbook that says when someone dies, this is how you act.
Correct.
Like, it's just like motherhood. There's no rule book. Granted, there's plenty of people who came out with books about how to be a parent. Are those the end all be all way? No. But
absolutely not.
There's no right way to grief.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't.
Correct. So they gave Matt a polygraph test and he passed with flying colors.
Oh, that's great.
So this did help in clearing Matt's name. However, when Matt told the story about the night, he obviously mentioned that he was not the only person at Cassie's aunt and uncle's house.
Very good, very good.
Mm-hmm. So the investigation took a turn when they discovered that Brian and Tori were also at Cassie's aunt and uncle's house.
Very good, very good.
Mm-hmm. Now, it was also discovered that Brian and Tori had a VHS tape, a recording.
They did not record what they did.
They did not record the actual murder. However, they did record a lot. So I encourage you right now, or when this episode is over, to literally sprint to our Instagram story and see the TikTok of the footage that I just posted of, like, the vlog that they posted that day. I
was like, TikTok? They was on TikTok? Like,
No. So people took the VHS tape and they made it into a TikTok. Okay. But
I was panicking a little bit.
I think that when you watch this video, and I'm about to send it to Ashley, but when you watch this video, like, this is kind of where I am with the mindset of, like, Tori Adamczyk might have had a lower IQ, but the things that he says on the footage are disgusting, despicable, and, like, he knew.
Yeah.
So I'm about to send the TikTok to Ashley, and I'm going to get her opinion in just a second.
Okay.
So I've clipped a few pieces of video that were filmed by Brian and Tori. And on our Instagram story, you can see the day of the murder, but, like, during the actual day, they are making a death list. And they mention Cassie by name. I mean, Ashley saw it. Yeah. And they even say, we're sorry to Cassie's family.
But she's got to die. She's perfect. What?
Yeah.
There's no way that you were going over there to scare them. There's no way. There's absolutely no way.
So on their death list, though, there's a transcript of, like, every video and I'm posting it too in the links. So if you want to go read it, like, I read the entire thing. I was sitting in bed and I was like, okay, I gotta quit reading this. It was, like, so disturbing.
Yeah.
You want to go read it, it is posted, and I'll even, like, put a star by it that says this is, like, the transcript. But they mention other people's names. Now, for protection, those names are highlighted out of the transcript. But they, like, the day before, the whole day, 24 hours before they murder Cassie, they try to go to, I think it says Jane Doe number one, Jane Doe number two, Jane Doe number three. They try to go to three other girls' houses to see if they're alone so that they can kill those girls. But nothing worked out. Like, their parents were home, or their boyfriends were home, or when they got there and they were talking to the girl, the parents arrived home. And it's all in the transcript.
Wow. Dang, Ashton. You all right, girl?
You heard that too?
Yeah, she was like...
She's dying.
Oh, yikes.
It wasn't her.
But, oh my gosh. But yeah, that's, like, very thankful that, you know, more people weren't added to their, you know, to what happened. But the fact that they were lurking and actively lurking for more people is very disturbing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And they were doing all of this because they believed they were making their own horror film. And if you did pause the episode and you saw on the Instagram story, then you probably heard Brian bragging about what he had done to Cassie on tape. So when the boys leave Cassie's home after killing her, you can hear the boys laughing and bragging. And you probably heard Brian say something like this. He says, quote, "I just killed Cassie. We just left her house." And then he adds, quote, "I stabbed her in the throat and I saw her lifeless body just disappear. Dude, I just killed Cassie," unquote.
Here's my thing. You're recording all of this. There's evidence of this. Granted, I'm not trying to help out no killers, but you didn't think that somebody would find this, or you just thought you
That's where
put
I think their
plan
stopped.
Like, you didn't think you was just going to put it under your bed and nobody
was ever going to find it.
And, like, you didn't think that once they interviewed Matt that he wouldn't, like, mention that y'all were over there.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it was not thought out. Like, I'm glad it wasn't, because they were brought to justice, but yeah.
Yeah. So Brian also says at one point in the video, and the reason I'm dropping these lines, as you'll hear in just a second, these specific lines, he says in the video, quote, "We're going to make history. We're going to make history."
Okay.
Tori, who is driving the car, responds with, quote, "I'm shaking." It is also to be noted that the day Cassie's body was discovered, the police did go to Tori's home where he and his dad were present, and the police did conduct their first set of questioning. Tori informed the police that he and Brian had been at the home for a party, but when a party didn't happen, they went to the movies. When Tori was asked what movie they saw, Tori was unable to give him the name of the movie. Yeah, you really weren't there. So, yes, there's that. But after the nameless movie, he said that the boys went back to Tori's house and that's where they spent the rest of the night. So, obviously, police are like, well, let's go to the movie theater.
Mm-hmm.
So they go to the movie theater and they try to see if they can validate this story. And a girl who also attends Pocatello High School, who knows Brian and Tori, she works at the movie theater. And they ask her, hey, did Brian and Tori come here last night? And she says, nope, I would have remembered them. I was letting everyone in free last night.
That's the type of movie theater people we need.
Yeah.
Let me in free.
So they didn't go.
Yeah, I mean, we knew that. But
yeah, we already knew that. Brian and Tori were arrested on September 27th, 2006, 5 days later. And when they were being interrogated by the police, both of them began pointing the finger at...
Each other.
Mm-hmm. Surprise.
Yeah, that's...
Shocker.
That was a given. That was a given. They don't seem very smart. So
yeah, they're not. They're not very bright.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. Brian claimed at first, yes, he was there, but he did not stab Cassie. Then he changed his story and said, okay. Yes, I did stab her, but only 3 times and only because Tori made me do it.
How he made you do it?
Mm-hmm.
Because first you was there, but you didn't do nothing. So you were a bystander. So that still makes you, you know.
Accessible.
You know. And then you were like, well, I did a couple stabs, but the man told me to do it. Like, mm-mm.
Nope.
Mm-mm.
No. Tori was claiming the same thing, but vice versa. That he was there, but he did not stab her.
Ironic.
And Tori never changed his story. So Brian was like, I was there, but I didn't stab her. Oh, wait. Yeah, I did stab her 3 or 4 times, but because Tori made me do it. Tori never changed his story. He says, I was there. I saw it, but I did not stab her. Brian is the only one that touched her. Brian also led the investigators to Black Rock Canyon, where they had dumped their clothing and other items. Among those items were 2 knives, a third-handled knife, a homemade Sony videotape, a box of stick matches, a bottle of hydrogen peroxide, a notebook, 2 masks, boots, gloves, a dress shirt, and a casual shirt.
So it was all just sitting there like in a pile?
They buried it.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. A search warrant was then issued on Tori's home, and when they searched his computers, they found evidence of child pornography and animal cruelty.
Oh, man. Hate to see it.
They're just racking up.
Yeah. They're just not good people.
They're really not. They're really the scum of the earth.
Yep. And that's why they're in jail for the rest of their lives.
They are.
Mm-hmm.
So at trial, Brian Draper admitted that his actions were inspired by Eric Harris and Dylan Kelbold. I can never pronounce Dylan's last name. But those were the Columbine killers. So he was like, I did it, but I was inspired by these people.
But my question is like, I mean, I know the basis behind Columbine, but they didn't stab people.
No, they did not.
So like, how were they your inspiration when you didn't even carry it out the same? Or was it just the story behind it? Like they were the outcasts and they eliminated the people.
Yes.
Okay.
And remember, Brian had a crush on Cassie. So like, there is potential for a motive there, but it was literally only mentioned like once. And all accounts, yeah, like Cassie knew he had a crush, but like Matt got to Cassie first and Brian was like, all right, cool. Like still like her though.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, you go and kill her. So to me, there does seem like a slight motive there, a slight personal motive.
Mm-hmm.
But that's my opinion.
Yeah, that does seem a little sus.
Yeah. Tori said that the pair were inspired by The Scream movies.
There it goes.
The defense tried to say that the video was just a film of the boys that they were making and that it wasn't real. It was just a movie.
So it's just ironic that the girl that they said they were gonna kill apologized to her family, got clips of her at her locker. It just so happens, ironically, that she also came up dead after they did all of these things. And it was just for play.
Yep, that's what they said.
Okay, I mean, clearly it didn't work. But, you know, A for effort, I guess. I mean, you tried, but you could have.
You have a whole, like, law degree. You could not have come up with something better?
Yeah, that just seems like.
Because if I'm a jury member, I'm like, this is their defense? Really?
Like, because you just not even trying to save these boys. Granted, they're unsavable, but.
Yeah, I mean, they literally filmed themselves. Like, they incriminated themselves.
Yeah.
Now, there was also DNA. There was Brian's DNA, and there was another male DNA, which we would assume is Matt, but they didn't have a reason to test Matt because Matt was cleared. So there was Brian's DNA, which was confirmed, and a second male DNA that was not confirmed, but it was not a match to Tori. And I say all this to say what I'm about to say in a second. So to this day, Brian is still the only one who has actually confessed to stabbing Cassie. Tori has still not confessed to actually stabbing her, and he only confessed to being there. So Tori's defense is still hard at work in order to get Tori's sentencing changed.
Oh, no.
Brian was convicted on April 17th, 2007, and Tori was convicted on June 8th, 2007. Sentencing took place on August 21st, 2007, and due to the fact that the jury found both of them guilty for first-degree murder, they were sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole, plus an additional 30 years for conspiring to commit other murders.
Nice.
Both boys, well, I guess they're men now, both of them are serving their sentences at Idaho State Correctional Institution located in Idaho. They are both housed in the same prison, and I hope that their friendship has completely died. I hope they hate each other to the depths of their soul, and that I hope that they try to steal each other's cornbread in the cafeteria, and it ends up falling on the floor, and the biggest guy in there ends up stepping on it every single day.
See, I hope a little different. I hope that their friendship did crumble, but I hope that they each got their own, like, gang, and they be having gang wars against each other all the time.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That would be a good one. Like, I hate him. Let's form a gang. And the other one like, oh, I hate him. Let's form a gang. And he got his people and he got his people. And they just be fighting each other all day.
Mm-hmm.
Stabbing each other shanks, you know, coming up behind him in the shower and just choking him out. Like, just that's what I imagine. I just imagine mm-hmm. the both of them living in fear that the other gang is just going to take him out one day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's no way their friendship survived this. I mean, they were both pointing the finger at each other.
I would sure hope not. Because how do you even recover from that?
Yeah.
There's no way. Like, yeah, sorry, man.
You literally tried to frame me, dude.
Yeah, there's no way. Like, sorry, man. You know, they were about to throw the book at me. I got to throw somebody in the bus. You know, like, there's no way you could.
Like, what?
And if they did and they miraculously are friends, like, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So Tori has since tried to appeal his case, obviously, and Tori is appealing his case on the premise of, I did not do this, I never said I did it, and they were also basing it on the fact that Tori's DNA was never found on Cassie, and in the video, it is Brian who says, quote, I just killed Cassie, I stabbed Cassie. I watched her body die. Tori never said anything. I mean, I read the entire transcript. He never implicated himself as the perpetrator.
Wow.
And
maybe he
did
that
on purpose. It's weird because Tori's the one that they said had the low IQ.
Mm. So he a little smart.
So either he knew what he was doing, or he got really lucky.
Mm-hmm.
However, even though they tried to appeal it, the Idaho Supreme Court said no.
Good.
and he remains in prison.
Very good.
In 2010, the Stoddart family filed a civil suit against the Idaho school district in which the teens attended, claiming school authorities were negligent and should have suspected or sensed that Brian Draper and Tori Adamczyk were a threat to the student body. The civil suit, however, was dismissed, saying that the actions of the killers was not known and could not have been known by teachers, administrators, and counselors.
I mean, it doesn't seem like they were actively talking about it, so I can see that.
Yeah, and I feel like, too, not unfortunately, because, it's part of it, but, like, schools come with their own set of lawyers. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I don't know the Stoddart's family, like, financial situations. I do know that Cassie's aunt lost her job after this tragedy happened because she fell into a depression and she could not make herself go to work. Mm. I also know that Cassie's aunt and uncle continuously tried to sell the house to get out of it because, you know, their daughter tried to unalive herself. Her aunt couldn't go to work and got fired. They didn't like living in that house, but they couldn't sell the house, and they didn't have the financial means to keep the house and move somewhere else. So it was like, you know, I don't know their financial situation, but what I do know is a school comes stacked with attorneys. And regardless if they believe that there was or was not enough evidence, these two kids, they were prepared to fight that in court. I didn't see much about anything where, like, Brian and Tori's teachers spoke out. Like, I mean, the few things about their IQs, but nothing about, like, their behavior or anything like that.
Yeah. It seems like they were pretty under wraps about it. Like,
yeah.
Just kept it between them rather than the other Scream murders, like, literally telling everybody they know, like, oh, we're going to murder people.
Correct.
Yeah.
There's also a documentary that I think I have linked it as well. There's also another documentary where when the Montgomery or something about Alabama. Anyways, when they changed the ruling of life sentences being an unfair sentence to juveniles.
Yep.
They did this whole documentary and they went and like interviewed all these people. And among these people were Brian and Tori. Brian is seen in the documentary crying and super remorseful, super apologetic, like in tears. Now, granted, it did not tug on my heartstrings because like you did what you did, sir. And mm-hmm. I do not feel sorry for you.
Yep.
But, he is clearly showing remorse. He is advocating for himself. He is admitting his wrongs. He is not denying it. He apologized to the Stoddart family in the documentary. Like, he is clearly shooketh. Then they turn to Tori, who has both of his parents sitting there. His mom is holding his hands, and his mom is like, my son is innocent. My son did not do this. My son is the real victim here. And it's crazy because his dad is sitting there the whole time with like shifty eyes. Like, his dad's not saying anything, but you can see, like, dad's...
You know,
like,
he's uncomfortable.
Exactly. He's clearly uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And in the documentary, Tori never mentions Cassie's name, never mentions the Stoddart family, never talks about it, just says that he's the victim, he was innocent, he did not do this, and he, like, does not think that his sentencing was fair, that he should be out, blah, 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 blah. Like, sir, I have more sympathy for Brian, who got on this documentary and showed some emotion. Like, you are the one that looks stone cold.
100%. I mean, the fact that you can't even mention her name is a red flag.
Correct.
Like, you didn't do it. Why don't say what exactly didn't you do?
Exactly. Say her name.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't because you a punk, B-I-T-C-H.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that is the second Scream murders that we are going to cover. And I can't find any more. So I'm hoping these are the only two. I'm really hoping these are the only two.
And hopefully none are inspired by the new Scream because clearly it's no.
Correct.
Mm-mm. It's a no.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, thanks for bringing us numero dos in the Scream murders. I'm glad they're behind bars. I'm glad justice was served. It just sucks. Like, it just really sucks. Like, she had a, she had things going for her.
She did. She, like, really, really did.
That's just a true shame. True, true shame.
Yep, yep. Well, my eyes are very heavy right now, and I feel like I have little particles of hair in them because I got my hair cut, and I need to go take these contacts out.
Yeah, I'm going to go back to playing Animal Crossing or Good Pizza, Great Pizza. It depends what I'm in the mood for. I'm just going to game out until I fall asleep. So,
also check to see if they have a Tamagotchi.
I did. I was Googling. They don't.
Oh.
It wasn't meant to be. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine. Kind of, Animal Crossing is kind of my live action Tamagotchi because I got to take care of my island. I got to, like, fish and, like, do all these things. Keep the people, you know, just keep it thriving. Yeah. So, yeah. But anyway, the bell don't dismiss you.
We do.
So we will see you next time. Bye, y'all.
Bye.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.